On June 15th, next Thursday, at noon in Terry Trunk Plaza, there is going to be an event organized by the SEIU Local 49, Justice for Janitors March and Rally, to celebrate victories, continue the struggle, and call for support for fair immigration reform. So that's next Thursday at noon at Terry Trunk Plaza downtown in Portland.
And to get inspired and prepared for that, see Bread and Roses. It's a wonderful film.
And it's available on video around Portland. Thanks very much.
Si vienen a bailar, pues vamos a gozar. Si vienen a dormir, hasta allá fuera de aquí.
Este es el ritmo de mi cookie, te empezó a mover. La tecnología que te traigo te daré un placer. Para que muevas tu cuerpo de la cabeza a los pies. Y ahora que estamos de pie, te repitan todo después.
Hey, hey,
hey,
oh, oh,
oh,
hey,
hey,
no me dejas sola. Este reventón sí es para.
Program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Laurie Mercier, and I'm here with Luz Maria Gordillo. And today we're talking about immigration and immigration rights. Luz Maria, the United States has long insisted on the one hand of having a relatively open border, but on the other hand, concerned, obsessed with the volume and character of those coming across it.
Yeah. I think that we have had a long history of xenophobic sentiments towards immigration in general. It's sort of like a collective paranoia that's been very well in place, I think. And if we go back to the 19th century, you know, and you can talk about the late 1800s, where you have the Chinese Exclusion Act.
Yeah, even before the Chinese Exclusion Act, this kind of early history of xenophobia since the Constitution and and trying to exclude non-white inhabitants from becoming citizens. And Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin worried about German speakers, German immigrants, and what a different language might do, non-English speaking immigrants might do to change the character of the country. And then the Irish were demonized. And then, as you point out, the Chinese recruited as workers in the American West, but then excluded as they are demonized. And, and that exclusion legislation of the 1880s was the first to specifically target a racial ethnic group.
Correct. And then you have in the 20th century, of course, you know, the birth of the Border Patrol when we, when we focus on Mexican immigration in 1924, which is really more symbolic because you have 420 agents, right, policing a 2,000-mile long border. So it was more a symbolic gesture rather than a military, you know, technique to curtail immigration. And then from there on, we have the massive recruitment of Mexican immigrants in 1942 with the inception of the Bracero program until 1965. And then in between, of course, 1954, the Operation Wetback, where, you know, Mexicans were raided and then deported. And then, of course, the Department of Labor would be waiting for them to be hired and be sent back to the very fields that they had been kicked out of, pretty much. So.
Well, you have done quite a bit of research on immigration and transnational communities. I mean, you've also noted that the media and the political world's focus on the so-called immigrant problem has ignored the immigrant experience. What do you think is critical to understanding what's going on here?
I think when we talk about the immigrant experience, we talk about sort of a structure that's already in place when you have a culture created, you know, and that's what I'm focusing on. When we listen to the voices, the very voices that are doing the labor and so on and so forth. So I think that, I want to go back to the film, you know, when they're talking about invisibility, you know, what does it mean to be invisible when you are a working, you know, member of society and then people just don't see you, right, legally and so on.
So that notion of illegality, too, is quite absurd. I mean, when we think about that, the emphasis today by the media and politicians on illegality, and it's quite astounding to listen to the mainstream news and this constant emphasis on aliens and illegal immigrants when they avoid the everyday illegalities of the U.S. government in
Correct.
Waging a preemptive and permanent worldwide war, secretly and indefinitely detaining suspects, and exempting the U.S. military from international war crimes tribunals, and repeatedly undermining or overthrowing legitimate governments around the world.
I think you're right, Lori. I mean, the word illegal has been thrown, you know, back and forth with so much ease. I think we need to stop and really think about what we mean when we say illegal alien, because when we talk about illegality, the United States has continuously broken their own law when it comes to Mexican immigration, because you, as well as I know, that they, you know, would lax these immigration laws so that Mexicans would be exempted from all of these different requirements. So they have continuously broken the law. The other idea is that, you know, when we talk about illegality, they have turned this debate into pro-illegal immigration and against illegal immigration. That is not the point. I think if we take a survey, no one is pro-illegal immigration except those who benefit financially, which would be, you know, wealthy farm owners, right? The coyotes, of course, all this sort of system of illegal, you know, paper falsification and so on and so forth. So these are the people who are really interested in continuing this illegal immigration. But if we ask the immigrants themselves, do you want to risk your life? Do you want to be separated from your family? Do you want to be severely abused? You know, your civil rights are not going to be defended and so on. I am sure everybody would say no, thank you. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that. And, you know, you referred to earlier the Border Patrol being established in 1924, and this was about the time of the restrictive immigration legislation, which really targeted Asians and Southern and Eastern Europeans. But it's interesting that Mexicans were excluded from that legislation because of heavy lobbying by growers in the American West needing that labor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this pattern throughout U.S. history of this simultaneous recruitment of labor and exclusion.
Correct.
But as you point out, the border has been this permeable geographic demarcation that communities and people, human beings, have not really acknowledged.
Right. And we're so proud, you know, when we present the United States of the land, you know, of immigrants and you know, recently there's this ironic counter argument, you know, about immigrants and how we are receiving them or welcoming them or not, for that matter, which is a big issue. But if we look back, you know, this nation was also founded by illegal aliens, because in the 1930s, you had Anglo illegal aliens trickling down to Texas against the Mexican government laws. So Texas was really, if we look back at history, founded by Anglo illegal aliens. So is this ironic or what? No, I mean, that's why I ask people to reflect on the use of language, which is so important. You know, one thing is to be illegal, another thing is to be undocumented. And what does that mean? And the implications socially about that, you know, persona.
Well, and it's also true that for much of U.S. history, maybe only 10% of the population were citizens. That the prevention of women and mm-hmm. African Americans, others, non-whites, and immigrants from voting and participating in civic life has a long history. But I also want to get back to your work on transnational communities and the meaning of this term transnational in this, I mean, that kind of gets back to that permeability of the border.
Yeah, I think we have, again, the focus on language. The word transnational has been sort of ripped apart by acknowledging a person's experience in the sending community and in the receiving community, and separating these experiences, what happens before or pre-immigration and after immigration. I'm arguing that the word transnational is one word, Lori. It's the experience of both. We need to integrate these both experiences. You can't talk about the immigrant experience by separating it. So the word transnational in my vocabulary means taking into consideration both of these experiences and then recognizing that there's a new one. This is a unique culture. That is the immigrant experience, and it's shared through this experience.
So there's, you really refute that notion of the melting pot or even the salad bowl, that there's something else going on here with immigrant communities.
Absolutely. I think there is no multiculturalism. This notion has been, you know, a notion to integrate, assimilate, you know, and we can talk about the word assimilation because it's very interesting as well, you know, and acculturation and so on. But, yeah.
Well, another argument that we hear about immigration and among those who are xenophobic and trying to institute some of these horrible restrictive laws is this economic argument, which is also something that's pretty ludicrous in examining immigrant lives and the immigrant experience in the United States. You know, this claim that immigrants are draining social services, keeping wages low.
Oh, my gosh.
And none of this is based on fact.
Absolutely not.
It's an appeal to this kind of racism that exists in fear of the dark foreigners coming into the country, and because there's no focus on real health care problems,
right?
Or Congress's refusal to raise the minimum wage,
right.
Or the deliberate weakening of unions, or trade union or trade policies that allow the mobility of capital but not the mobility of workers. So immigrants really have little to do with these economic woes.
Right, right. And the other thing is we've been handling the same discourse for 100 years. People, please, let's change this idea. These three, you know, major arguments have been there. It's like in a time capsule, you know, 100 years with the same issues, draining social services, you know, taking other people's jobs. Let's move on to a newer argument, please, you know.
Well, can we see some differences in arguments today versus previous restrictive xenophobic and demonizing efforts against immigrants? Are there some differences that we see today in how we are understanding immigration, the immigration hysteria, and also immigration rights?
Yeah, I think things are very different. No, I mean, if when we compare, you know, and I'm stuck with 100 years. I'm sorry, it's too early in the morning. But when we think about this 100-year span, you know, and the recent ideas of immigration, we have a large number of immigrants now, of Latinos in the United States. We cannot compare with the situation and the context of 100 years because things have gotten so much bigger and larger in the global spectrum. So things that we do here have reverberate along, you know, the developing worlds. So circumstances are very different now. And when we look at immigration, we need to put it in the context of globalization. But as you articulated before, it's not only when we look at economics, we need to look at culture, we need to look at social issues. We cannot always have an argument that is based on economics.
And I think one of the differences today, or a big difference with earlier restrictive efforts, are that labor unions are supporting rights of immigrants. I mean, labor unions, which once fought against immigration, are now supporting immigrant rights because they recognize their futures and their abilities to survive really rest on the organizing and militant activities of these immigrant workers. And I think, too, just the level of discourse has changed. I mean, if we look back in the 1920s or in the 1960s, I mean, I think we'd see a lot more overt racism. And at least now that language is more coded, and we see how multiculturalism or the civil rights movement has made a difference in how people are responding to immigrants and believing in some basic human rights.
Correct. Yes. And being aware that this time around, it's a very different context. We're having the birth of a social movement, I think, and we should analyze that a little more deeply. That's why
we have in the studio with us now Jasmine Rodriguez, a recent graduate of Washington State University, Vancouver.
Would like Jasmine. Hello.
And organizer of some very exciting recent demonstrations in the Yakima Valley. Welcome, Jasmine.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, Jasmine, what we wanted you to elaborate is the recent events that just sparked up with these bills, immigration reforms and so on, have affected everyone around the nation. So we wanted you to talk about the organizing in Yakima Valley for the big march and how that happened.
Yes, first of all, for many of you that don't know what the Yakima Valley is full of immigrant workers, especially of Latino descent. It's actually the seventh largest county in the United States that holds immigrants. And one of the reasons why we started organizing the marches with the youth was basically to get the word out and to show throughout the nation that the Hispanic vote is a largely growing political muscle that will be voting. And we just want to inform the youth that has the ability and the opportunity to get educated, to learn about their political system and cultural and social systems that we live in here in the U.S. And like Dr. Gordillo was saying about how it's a different culture, that's absolutely right in every sense. I'm an immigrant from Mexico, and I've been living in this country for 20 years or so, and I'm stuck in two cultures trying to know about Mexico and respect the nation that I live in as well. And I think we have gone to extremes, especially in our political system here in the U.S., by labeling immigrants as criminals when we know that most of them are here to work and have decent lives that contribute to the economic and social, cultural system of the United States. And I think we have to look at the issue more as it is a racism more than trying to fix the immigration problem. And as we know, the system really isn't going to work for immigrants. And these marches were basically to mobilize people in the Yakima Valley. And recently, by the visit of President Fox from Mexico, like 2 weeks ago, that really meant a lot for immigrants in the Yakima Valley. And we were just basically trying to mobilize, educate, and get people to register to vote and to motivate them to learn about the political system that affects them every day as undocumented workers.
You told us that young people were involved in this movement, and that's been something pretty exciting around the country with these huge demonstrations organized not only in large cities like L.A. and Chicago, but cities like Dallas and Atlanta, which we normally don't think of as having very large protest movements. And in many of these places, young people, high school and college students, have been at the forefront of this organizing. Do you want to tell
Absolutely.
Us something about how you all organized in the Yakima Valley?
Yes, the first one, we started at a high school, at a local high school that is 80% minority, Hispanic and Black. And the students in the high school were actually the ones that motivated and triggered these marches. And later on, we saw the success and how the enthusiasm of these high schoolers went out. So we decided to call out the community for a community march. And the high school march brought out 4,000 people, and the community march brought out 14,000 in support of the immigration reform policy that we're trying to have a comprehensive reform act that will benefit and not only criminalize and sabotage these immigrants as workers.
I think one of the things that I'm really excited about in terms of having youth participation is that we have the major social movements like the Chicano movement, for example, in the 1960s, really, you know, being triggered by both, you know, the farm workers and the students who were right there, you know, in the vanguard of the entire movement. So mm-hmm. this is something that is vibrant. It's a historical formation of social movements.
This collaboration across generation and class, correct. Among students and workers. Mm-hmm. Well, Jasmine, were these demonstrations spontaneous or connected to national networks?
Yes, the first one was kind of a spontaneous with the high schoolers, but the second one was actually more planned. We had a committee, and we were in protest of March 1st, which was no buying, no going to school, no work for the National Worker Day. And
May 1st,
mm-hmm. I'm sorry, May 1st. And yes, it was planned, but basically it was in harmony with what was going on throughout the United States.
And that's when we saw the visibility of Mexicans coming out into the streets. And now when we say they're invisible, they're no longer invisible. This has brought definitely visibility to Mexican immigrants and has allowed also people to empower themselves, you know, by marching out without fear, Lori, which is something very important, you know, because when you live in a place where you fear for your existence, it must be very, you know, anxiety provoking, to say the least.
Well, Jan and Fran were earlier reviewing Bread and Roses, that great film about mm-hmm. immigrant workers organizing. And do you remember that scene?
Yes. When they're in the elevator and they're cleaning the elevator with like Q-tips or
screwdrivers.
Right.
Yeah.
And these people, these Euro-Americans walk right by them, you know, literally over them, you know, and one of them makes a comment and says, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you, these uniforms make us invisible. That was a huge statement, Lori, you know, because as a social comment.
Absolutely.
That's what it is. What do you think, Jasmine?
I completely agree with you. Many immigrants, what really throws me out of context is when people say they're taking good American jobs. But when we analyze that in the context that they're saying it, good American jobs are $6 an hour, picking fruit, cleaning toilets, serving your food. Absolutely good American jobs. We need to realize why we're saying that. And if you are willing to do what these immigrant workers are doing, no jobs, no benefits, I mean, 12 hours, I mean, no rights whatsoever, no civil rights or anything like that. So if you consider that good American jobs, and I think that we need to look back and say, am I willing to do that type of job? And if you are, then you might be able to take it. We don't know yet. We're analyzing and hoping that a good immigration reform act comes out of this for the benefit of all of us and everybody's interests.
That's very interesting, this concept of American, right? And that being Americanized. What does that mean? I want to know. When we say American, what are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, the American dream within quotes? What does that mean? That we all want a house and a car and a white picket? Yeah, flash news, we all want the same thing. You don't need to be Euro-American to want that. So,
and earlier in the show, Bill Bigelow and Bill Resnick were talking about NAFTA and those policies, which mm-hmm. have created these economic conditions in Mexico and in the U.S., which deliberately pull people from Mexico to the U.S. I'm wondering if in the Yakima Valley, I mean, you've come across these stories of immigrants about how NAFTA policies have affected their lives and their families?
Oh, definitely. I think most of the undocumented workers in the Yakima Valley are here because of the NAFTA policies that literally made them move up here to look for food and jobs. And if we want to look at the immigration issue even further, I think we would have to go back to foreign policy and why these immigrants are coming here. And that's the real question and the root of the problem. So, absolutely, the immigrants in the Yakima Valley are forced here, I would say, because of these politics and policies in place.
Very good. I think, would you like to make any more comments about the organizing? I think it was very exciting to see on May 1st so many people out there marching along with their families, because I happened to be marching with them, and we saw children participating in this march, where you have a family sort of composed social movement, where you see everybody marching together, and it was very exciting. You were there.
Yes, I was. I was able to go to the ones in Portland and Yakima, and it's just a beautiful thing, and I think that we just need to accept the Browning of America and work together, because we are living under this nation as a culture, and we just need to work together as human beings. I believe that is the core of the situation that we need to look at as humans.
Luz Maria, you had some announcements you wanted to make.
I think I've gotten several emails from people very concerned, Lori, about the implications of all this reform. And, of course, one of our primary concerns is all of these sharks preying upon the immigrants by promising, you know, legalization procedures and so on and so forth. And I'd like to tell people to be very careful. Nothing has been ratified. The two bills are still in the Congress. They need to come up with a common agreement. That both bills are very different. The committee has to ratify that, and then after that, the president. Of course, it goes back to Congress and to the president. So please be careful. And if you excuse me, I'm going to say this in Spanish as well.
Sí.
Quiero advertirles a todos nuestros compañeros mexicanos que tengan cuidado, porque hay muchísimos impostores tratando de cobrarles y sacarles su dinero y prometiendo cosas que no les van a dar, porque nada se ha ratificado. Son dos diferentes bills en la Casa, en el Senado y en la Casa de Representantes. Todavía se tiene que formar un comité para que se ratifiquen las cosas que están en común. Se regresa al Congreso y de ahí tiene que ir al presidente. Entonces, nada va a estar finalizado. Tengan, por favor, cuidados. Los predadores están ahí y están pues tratando de venderles servicios que realmente no existen. Entonces tengan muchísimo cuidado. That's all I wanted to say.
Gracias, Luz María Gordillo y Jasmine Rodriguez.
And I wanted to say, and leave us with just three words, if I may.
Sí.
Well, go ahead. Do you want to?
Well, we also want to thank Carl Vandervoort for his excellent job in engineering today, and Bill Resnick and Bill Bigelow, Jan Hocken, and Fran Michelle. Thank you all for joining us on the Old Mole Variety Hour. Y Luz María.
And the three words for you today are, si se puede.
Thank you all.
Tómate esta botella conmigo. Y en el último trago nos vamos. Quiero ver a qué sabe tu olvido sin poner en mis ojos tus manos. Esta noche no voy a rogarte. Esta noche te vas de veras. Qué difícil tener que dejarte sin que sienta que ya no me quiera. Nada me han enseñado los años, siempre caigo en los mismos errores. Otra vez a brindar con extraños y a llorar por los mismos dolores.
tómate esta botella conmigo y en el último trago me besas. Esperamos que no haya testigos por si acaso te diera vergüenza si algún día sin querer tropezamos. No te agaches ni me hables de frente, simplemente la mano nos damos y después que murmuramos.
It's 10 a.m. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Coming up on KBOO, Dr. David Naiman interviews Dr. Arthur Barsky, author of Stop Being Your Symptoms and Start Being Yourself, a six-week mind-body program to ease your chronic symptoms. At 10:30, Scott Forrester hosts Monday on the Environment. And at 11 on Democracy Now, hear an interview with environmental journalist and author David Hilvarg about hurricanes and coastal development. And we also hear from farmers in South Central L.A. who are expecting to be evicted from what is the largest urban farm in the United States. And tonight at 10 on Talking Earth, hear poets Judith Montgomery and Penelope Scambly Schott in conversation and reading with Barbara Lamorticelle.